Hey, what's up? It's the Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk. We're going to get right to our buddy. He's on the Tapman's Towing phone line. We'll mention here in a little while that the streak has continued, Kyle. But in the meantime...
We can't overlook that.
We cannot.
No.
We cannot. Luke Goody is on the Tapman's Towing phone line. This segment brought to you by a handful of great sponsors. Max Twin City Recycling, Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing, First Federal Savings Bank, Crossroads Contractor Supply, Brian Hansen at State Farm Insurance, and also Carpenters Local 243. Joining us now, the sharpshooter for Illini basketball, Luke Goody. Luke, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
What'd you learn? It was a big-time game over there at State Farm Center on Tuesday, number four in town. It was a tight game, obviously went down to the end, and you had a nice performance yourself. But overall, what'd you take away from that one?
Yeah, you know, I thought we played well for most of the game. Marquette's a really good team, and they're ranked in the top five for a reason. So they came in and they hit shots. Credit to their point guard. He had a great game, preseason All-American, you know, living up to the hype. But, you know, I think that's the game that we look back on and we figure out our mistakes and what went wrong. But we look at it, you know, with a hopeful idea, you know, in our heads that we played that game. We played that game good, and you know, we just take it and learn from it and move on.
Before we dive in more on your performance and the team as a whole, Tyler Kolek, you mentioned there, first team All-American. How tough was he in terms of what he brought to the table? And maybe, I mean, you've been on this squad now for a handful of years. Where does maybe, I know this is a tough question to ask you on the spot, where does he kind of stack up in your mind as far as some of the opponents you've gone up against?
Yeah, he's pretty impressive. I heard that the game before, too, he got hurt and messed up his ankle pretty bad and played in our game when he, most games he probably wouldn't have played in. So all credit to him. He was a great player. Since I've been here, though, I've played against some really good players. Mm-hmm. You know, the Murray brothers at Iowa, those guys are elite. And Benedict Mathurin and a bunch of the Big Ten guys, E.J. Liddell, there's so many names. Malachi Branham.
Right.
So many names that we've, like, good names that we played against that stack up. But he's definitely a great player, and he's going to have a great career at the next level.
Yeah, and still some Zach Edey dude you're going to see at some point down the road, too.
Yeah,
he's pretty
exactly,
good.
Exactly, yeah.
As far as you go, though, career high, you hit four threes. That was huge, obviously. You and Marcus, three-point shooting in the first half, keeping you guys in that ball game. What'd you see out of yourself to be able to step up and make down those knock down those shots, which were big for you guys on that night?
Yeah, it's just opportunities and confidence, honestly. My teammates put me in a great opportunity to make shots. We really got the ball moving in the first half. I was able to get a couple clean looks just to get going. And then after that, I kind of was able to create myself and do my own thing and just play through the system. So, you know, when you hit your first shot and get going in the offense early, it's easier to get in a groove and kind of have a feel for the game. So after I knocked down that first one, I was kind of confident throughout the rest of the game, and my teammates knew to find the hot hand.
We've seen through the years that corner three can be – obviously, a really quality shot, and if you go back a handful of years, obviously, Io being able to get downhill, and it seems like when opponents have to cheat off those corners, Terrence now with his downhill ability, is that something where you kind of know that teams are going to do what they have to do to try to clog that lane up, and that corner can, in particular, be a spot that is a soft spot in the defense, can be a nice place to spot up and get those opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, all teams do stuff differently, and it goes by scout and where they help from and their tags and all the stuff like that off ball. But when you have a guard and multiple guards that can get downhill and create themselves, it shrinks the floor. And me being able to spread the floor, it's tough for the defense. They got to pick and choose because, you know, that help defender, Terrence, is going to get by his man. Ty's going to get by his man, and they're going to have to make a decision whether to go help on the ball or to stay out with me. So it's really a double-headed or double-sided sword with TJ getting downhill. You know, he's going to finish the ball if they don't help, and if not, then he's going to throw it outside to me or Marcus, you know, some of our shooters to get that shot.
Luke Goody is our guest on the Tapman's Towing phone line. As it got in the latter portions of the second half, I know it was tough for you guys to offensively continue it on. I think it was two for your last 16, had some turnovers mixed in there. Was there anything as you went back and evaluated it that – stood out in terms of, you know, why things were tough to execute down the stretch, or was it just a situation of making some mistakes and missing shots?
Yeah, you know, I think Marquette deserves a little bit of credit. You know, they played some good defense in the second half of the second half. I feel like they really locked into what they were doing. But then it's also us, you know. People want to talk about how old we are and how experienced we are, but we haven't really played together much, and you got to take that into account. You know, we got a bunch of old guys that have played college basketball for a long time, but you bring in Marcus, who's new and hasn't been in the system. You bring in Quincy and all those other guys, you know, the two freshmen that are getting big minutes. It's tough, and obviously that's going to get better throughout the season. But, you know, I think this game, it was a big learning curve for all of us, and I think we're going to do a great job taking what we learned from it, you know, being able to trust each other and move on from it.
Marcus, you mentioned him there, 18 points for him. He got it going from three, and also we know he can score inside the arc as well. Nice turnaround jump shot is something that he's flashed here early. What did you notice about him in that game and what he can be for you guys going forward?
Yeah, that's just been him since he's been on campus. He's been the dynamic scorer that he was last game. He's always been able to kind of get downhill, create for himself, and come off ball screens, make the right decisions, and he just found that three ball last game. So credit to him. He's been shooting the cover off the ball in practice, and we're excited to keep getting the ball, keep on scoring stuff, help out our team.
Is there a particular area, something that Brad has wanted to address here in the last couple of days coming off that Marquette game and as you guys push forward?
Yeah, we took one day to kind of go over the Marquette game, which was yesterday, and recap everything, and let's move on now. You know, we have two mid-major teams coming in here this weekend, pretty close turnaround or quick turnaround after the Friday game to play a Southern team, and we have a Valparaiso team coming in here with a former Illinois player as their head coach, so they're coming in here with a little extra to prove. I think that's something to take into account, and we got to be ready. So we've moved on completely from that game, and we've turned our focus to these next couple.
I know that Brad has mentioned, you know, offensive rebounding, second chance points, something that his teams have always done really well through the years, and he's still wanting a little bit more out of this squad on that front. I know you had, in particular, a couple of offensive rebounds in that last game. As a team, what's key to maybe getting more production in that particular area?
Yeah, I think it's key because it opens up more opportunities to score the ball. When guys aren't getting as many looks within the system, it's easier to get looks when you go offensive rebound. You know, I was able to get an offensive rebound and I'll put back and get sent to the line. And otherwise, that possession, I wouldn't have gotten the ball. So I think it's one of those things that, you know, if guys want to be selfish and get their stats up, they just got an offensive rebound. And that's really what it is, because not only does it help the team and get you extra possessions and get you more opportunities, but it also helps yourself. So I think that's something that, you know, we have to look at in more of a selfish way and just kind of tell yourself, like, if I want to score and get these stats, this is how I do it.
Like you said, Roger Powell coming in, former Illini, part of that 04-05 team, D. Brown, Darren Williams and company. How old were you for that squad, Luke? Is that even something that was on your radar? Were you too young at that point?
Yeah, I was too young. I was 3 years old.
Wow.
When he was playing for the Illini, so I was pretty young.
Making everybody out there that does remember that feel a little bit old, obviously.
Yeah.
Valpo, is there anything that as you guys have dove into them as a team that stands out, that's something you guys maybe will have to really lock in on as far as what they do or what strengths they have?
Yeah, they have a couple good wing scorers that can really score the ball. Jackson Edwards actually is from Indianapolis. I grew up playing against him and played against him a bunch in high school, so I'm pretty familiar with his game, and he's had a good season so far. So they got a couple guys that can really go. We just got to neutralize those guys, and they have a freshman four-man that's pretty good, pretty skilled, and we have to make sure that those guys can't affect the game to be able to beat us. So we got to come out ready to go and use our game plan and everything like that to keep those guys under wraps.
Two basketball games for you guys this weekend, Friday and then Sunday. Sandwiched in between there, a big football game over there in Iowa City. I'm sure you'll be tuning in for that. What are your thoughts on this Illini squad that's got some things going here recently? They've been a fun team to keep tabs on of late. What do you think about that matchup in Iowa City?
Yeah, it's pretty cool to watch what they're doing right now. You know, they're definitely turned it around, got a couple big dubs, and I just saw something about Iowa's best player being hurt, and I know Iowa doesn't give up any points, and Illinois has been scoring a lot of points lately, so I'm predicting a pretty big win for the Illini on Saturday. I think they go in there and take care of business, and I think they still have a chance to win the Big Ten West, or share it at least, don't they? If Iowa loses a couple times and they win out. So with that opportunity and the way that we're playing football without their best defensive player, who's, I'm pretty sure, going to be a big-time draft pick, I think we got a good chance.
Yeah, it should be fun, and still mathematically a chance. If you can get some help, and obviously you can help yourself going there and beating Iowa and then taking care of business in the finale against Northwestern. A lot of basketball for you guys coming up, too, this weekend. You got another one the week of Thanksgiving as well. So, Luke, we'll look forward to catching up with you next week. Best of luck this weekend, and congrats on a really nice performance against Marquette. And obviously we will look forward to you keeping it rolling.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. It's nice to talk to you guys again.
You as well. Luke Goody on the Tapman's Towing phone line. That segment brought to you by Max Twin City Recycling, Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing, your home's best friend, First Federal Savings Bank, local and trusted, Crossroads Contractor Supply, the right tools when you need it, Brian Hansen at State Farm Insurance, visit brianismyguy.com, and Carpenters Local 243. Let's bring back in my co-host, Kyle Tosk. What'd you think of what Luke had to say? Obviously, you have to be in a situation as much as you can maybe nitpick and say, hey, if a couple of plays go differently, Illinois could have come out with that win. But it is encouraging the way that Luke shot the ball. We put a lot of emphasis on three-point shooting with this team and how, on the whole, it's still a question mark. But when him and Marcus are able to get those shots to go, I mean, that can be a big asset for this team, and it definitely was in that first half.
Yeah, I just want to start first off. You noticed that a voice was missing in that interview. I mean, we gotta mention real quick. I mean,
another week of Vontae is not here
for one of the days during the week.
I feel like he's doing it purposely now. He's like trying to keep the streak.
He wants this to happen. He wants to like make it a full calendar year without working a full week or something. Man. I mean, he's chugging along at that goal if that's what he's aiming at.
He is that veteran catcher who is getting like every day game off within the middle of a week.
He's the definition of load management in the NBA. I mean, he's the typical NBA player who
everybody gets mad at Kawhi Leonard, and Lon is establishing himself as one of those. So
to go back to your question, though, I thought Luke was great on Tuesday night, and Luke and Marcus together, really, when you think about kind of the skill sets that each of those guys bring. I mean, they needed that shooting, and we saw how reliant they were, much to the detriment of them quite often when they take 33 of 63s. That's not something I love to see, but when the shots are coming from those two guys, particularly a guy like Luke and the quality of looks that he got, I'm fine with him taking 7 threes every night. Because I think he can really be a spark on offense, and I thought he was great. And I just think coming off that game, they got to figure some things out on offense. That's really the story. And I know, Luke alluded to some of the issues there down the stretch, but that's the biggest takeaway from that game is late game offense, and maybe that involves Luke being on the court because he's a guy that when things break down, try to get inside and find him in the corner, and that he's going to be reliable and can knock a shot down for you. Maybe that's one of the solutions, but whatever it is, I think you just got to get that figured out down the stretch, because the late game possessions were brutal, and that was the difference in the game to me, was that Marquette's possessions were very quality down the stretch. Illinois weren't, and they just didn't have a go-to guy and a go-to option.
Yeah, and if you want to talk about possibly setting up some set plays, Luke's a guy you can run off a couple of screens, and obviously if you have him and Marcus in at the same time, now there can be some matchups against some more let's just call it what it is, more athletic teams, that can be something that you got to evaluate as far as the give and take there with what they're going to be presented with defensively. But those are two knockdown shooters. At least we know Luke has established himself as that. I was pulling up his career numbers right before the show. I mean, he's now a 41% career shooter from beyond the arc. He's 7 for 14 this year, 50%. Knocked down 3 threes against Eastern, 4 against Marquette. Great to have him get that confidence. And it was very, very necessary. There was not a lot going for Illinois offensively, especially, throughout the night, it was really three guys. It was Luke, Marcus, and Terrence. And especially, I've brought it up a number of times, that first half, without Marcus and Luke putting in those threes, Illinois is in a world of hurt, which fortunately those guys were able to step up in that. But, yeah, no, I think it's a good point in terms of having him out there in those moments. We know that he's a good free throw shooter as well. So that's something that and I think you can also couple it with, I believe, you know, Luke is a guy that's going to mix it up on the glass. When he's out there, I think he is going to go and try to get those effort plays. I mean, he ripped one out of Tyler Kolek's hands one time underneath Marquette's basket, trying to make sure that that was not going to be an offensive rebound for Marquette. So I liked how Luke looked.
He had an offensive rebound of his own where he got to the free throw line as well early in the first half, I remember. So, he's a guy, you know what you're getting from Luke every time out there. You really do. And there's certain matchups, like we saw against Kansas, there's certain matchups that he might struggle with, especially if you're playing bigger front courts and you're trying to squeeze him in there at the four. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some matchups that maybe he's a little bit more limited, but I think there's going to be a lot of times where you want to have his presence, his steadiness, and his ability to just make a shot, because there's so many times where it just feels like they're taking a lot of shots and they're not going in. I think more often than not, if you give Luke a quality look from three, especially in the corner, he's going to come through and make those at a pretty high clip, at least comparatively to the rest of most of these guys. And Marcus the same way. It's an interesting thought. I'm curious to see. We're not going to see crunch time close games against Valpo, Western Illinois, and Southern.
Shouldn't.
But once we get into that early December stretch, I'm curious to see some adjustments that are maybe made there, and just going to be an ongoing process offensively with this team. I'm not saying that it's, you know, I saw one game against a really good Marquette team and they struggled down the stretch, so that's it. They're going to be awful offensively and it's never going to get corrected. I think they can. They've got pieces to do that, but that remains my biggest takeaway from Tuesday, is that you just got to figure something else out coming down the stretch of games. And maybe that's just guys that were actually on the court making better decisions for you, because that's a big part of it too.
Yeah, there were a lot of bad decisions made in the final 11 minutes, turnovers, bad shot selection. And I think that Luke is one of those guys I would trust with the ball. He's had some moments where he's turned it over. I think it was the Kansas game. He had a couple of bad ones, but for the most part, he seems to be pretty sure-handed and a guy that is going to be in the right spots doing the right thing. So glad to see that he was able to have that kind of performance, and hopefully it's something that he can continue to build on. On the note of the volume of threes,
oh, goodness,
I do want to bring this up because I thought it was an interesting comment by Brad Underwood today. We'll play his full press conference, I believe, tomorrow. We're going to do Brett Bielema's today. We're going to talk to...
I can try to play the clip of him, of the one you're about to get to here.
Okay. Sean Bach, Hawkeye Insider, to break down Iowa coming up here later this hour. We're going to be joined by him to preview the game between Illinois and Iowa this weekend, as well as I want his thoughts. I know that Sean does a lot on the hoop side, so I want to get his take on what Fran McCaffrey's team has looked like so far, and just overall thoughts on a squad that lost some pieces. Obviously, Chris Murray is a big one. Filippo Bracha, they had to replace that front court in particular. So I'll be interested to hear, what he has to say about, you know, what he expects out of Iowa on the basketball side. But you have the clip ready. Brad had a quote about the amount of threes, 33 of them, against Marquette, and I think the answer as far as his evaluation on that might surprise you a little bit. So, Brad Underwood from today.
You know, I got the question post-game, did we shoot too many threes? I wish we would have shot more. We shot 33%, 34%, and man, we had some really good looks. We missed too many layups, we didn't play with enough pace offensively. One thing Marquette did was play with great, great pace, that allows them to get their angles. We did that in the Kansas exhibition, played with great pace. We got to get back to that.
43s, maybe? Is that what Brad wants? Instead of 33?
I mean, he said multiple times in the offseason that he wanted to take less and he wanted to be less reliant.
He did, yeah.
Really makes me curious where this is coming from today, because I'll be honest with you, like, a lot of the looks they got, I don't want to say all of them, but a good amount of the looks they got from three were pretty good, I thought, in that game. I didn't necessarily have an issue. I didn't feel like the biggest issue offensively was guys were just chucking threes on Tuesday. I thought a lot of the looks they got, Luke took seven of them, Marcus took seven of them, and obviously you trust Terrence. He can pull up and make some of those shots. Some of the ones he made were huge. Quincy had some wide open ones he didn't make. Mm-hmm. Dre had a couple open ones that he didn't make. So I didn't totally have an issue with the shot selection that game, but I still just think that there's a tendency for this team to just fall back into that trap of being so reliant from three. I think the beginning of the game was really apparent in that, where you brought it up yesterday, 9 of the first 13 shot attempts were from three. And again, and knowing the opponent, knowing the scouting report, like, this is a Marquette team that doesn't have a lot of rim protection, was bad at defending the paint last year. Terrence Shannon, just go. Mm-hmm. If you turn it over a couple times, it's fine. Just go. Dre, get in there. We know how athletic you are. Get to the bucket. Penetrate inside. Collect, and then if you get open threes off of that, that's fine. I just, you know, more than 50% of their shots are threes. I didn't think necessarily they took a ton of terrible ones in that game, but there's just no way that you can tell me you want to take more than 54% threes for this team that we've seen for a year and three games now is not very good at making threes.
They're not, no, and still on the season they're shooting 31% from three, which is below average. They shot 32 of them in the opener against Eastern. They hit 10 of them. If you're going to shoot 30-plus and you make double digits, you can live with those numbers. But I don't know that I would have necessarily thought, hey, you know what they could have used is actually more three-point shots. That was not the way I saw it. If Brad is looking at the context of, well, we shot 10 for 27 inside the arc, and knowing what we shot from three, then the math says, well, it makes more sense to have taken more of those threes if we were going to shoot that poorly from two. I think the thing that, and I don't know, Brad, we don't have him on the line here to fully explain this quote and way of thinking, but I would say I wanted more downhill action, more, you look at 44 to 20 points in the paint. Even though Illinois didn't shoot it well from two, I would say we should have shot it better from two. We should have made more layups. We should have got to the free throw line more. Only 13 free throw attempts against Marquette. And yes, I know Oso Iguodaro was sitting there in the paint as a rim protector, but not a guy. I mean, based on, I've beat the drum to heck as far as the Golden Eagles last year being dead last in the Big East in 2-point field goal defense. You had an ability, I think, to drive your man, and if he comes over to help, that's usually a nice dump off pass to a big man. I know that's not really maybe Coleman Hawkins' game to spot up around the basket, but still, I think that was something that Illinois
added to your game, man. I mean, you get so many easy buckets,
no doubt,
especially if you're starting at the five next to Terrence Shannon, who's going to draw a lot of gravity when he gets to his left hand. Add it to your game. Don't tell me that it's not part of your game is rolling to the basket and getting easy buckets, you know, around the rim. I think that was the stat of the game for me. 44-20 in the paint is just, that should never happen with this roster. You look up and down this roster, you should never lose the paint battle by 24. When we talk all about how this team is predicated on all the size they have in their starting lineup, all the physicality they have, the depth in the front court, like, there's just no way you should be getting outscored in the paint by 24 points against a Marquette team that coming in. I know that was part of Illinois' strategy, and that always is under Brad, is limit the three-point line, force them into twos. But that was the stat of the game for me. That can't happen. You can't expect to win with this roster build and this roster makeup, scoring 20 points in the paint, giving up 44.
Yeah, I agree. I know Tim says, what other shot can you get when they're running the five-out offense and nobody cuts? Same issue as last year. They do need more off-the-ball movement. I definitely agree with that. Even if it's not some people like to talk about, and I think that it's warranted to wonder about structure of an offense, is there cuts that are designed within that offense? Are they running, okay, we're going to pass it to the right wing, the left wing is going to cut down the lane? It doesn't necessarily have to be so predetermined and dictated. It can be these field-based plays, which we praised Illinois coming off of the Kansas game, that there was nothing within the design of a play that had Justin Harmon cut down the lane when Coleman Hawkins had the ball in the mid-post. It was a field play, a veteran play that he made, and Coleman made a good pass, and that was a key late bucket against Kansas. Illinois has needed more of those type of plays to be able to get downhill. So I think just also having more guys that can beat someone off the dribble and just force that collapse, whether they're going to take the shot, whether they're going to get fouled at the line, or it's the rotation of a defense then opens somebody else up, and it doesn't always have to be a kick-out three either. And if you're open from three, sometimes you don't have to be the one to take that shot. You can drive that empty space. I know that some will argue, well, what if that ends up being a mid-range two, which a lot of people hate these days. I think if you're good at it, obviously you'd and I would assume it was outside of the line of analytics, what they say about mid-range twos, but kind of big picture.
I feel like Terrence Shannon, sorry to cut you there, but
go for it.
I feel like Terrence Shannon, and he's talked about a couple times, he should be a lethal mid-range guy. Like, I want to see that in his game a little more.
Yeah.
Especially with just how good he is at times, especially when he's on a heater, at making shots off the dribble. We see him pull up for three a lot and have success, and those are usually some of Illinois' biggest shots. Like, I think he should add a mid-range game, and I want to see that more because I feel like it's either settle for a three or out-of-control drive to the rim, all or nothing, looking for contact, and a lot of times that's successful. But I think that he could have some success if he added that to his game.
I agree. There was one that I saw him take against Marquette, and that was really probably the only one I can really think of within these first three games. It rimmed out. It was kind of a step in inside the arc, pull-up shot. It might have been within an ISO, which I would rather it be like a come off a ball screen and they're playing your drive and then you have space to knock down that shot. But we'll see. I think even given the competition, which last note on this, I know we got to catch a break to get Sean Bach on here, but Valpo, 337th on KenPom based on like 361, 362 D1 teams. They're based on what the KenPom rankings are, they're going to be the worst team that you've played so far this year or will play this year as things stand right now. Southern, 276. Western Illinois, 323.
Gauntlet.
You should blast all three of those teams, but that doesn't mean you can't work on your offense. Admittedly, I don't want to see you go out against Valpo and you chuck 43s.
No.
I'm not saying they're going to, and Brad mentions there. Within that quote, he does bring up a point about playing with more pace, maybe doing more within transition, quick-hitting offense. I think there's something to be said about that, but we'll see how it goes. We'll have to evaluate what this offense's identity continues to evolve into, if it does change here going forward, before you dive back into the meat of that schedule. That will be interesting. If you want to weigh in, you can. We've had a number of you do so already on the U of I Atlanta Link text line, 217-359-2255. Hit us up. We will read some of those as we go along. Coming up next, Sean Bach, Hawkeye Insider, fill us in on his vantage point of Illinois and Iowa and Iowa City coming up on Saturday, as well as what Fran McCaffrey has on his hands for this hoop season. We'll do that next. It is The Drive.
Local, personal, trusted. Hi, this is Atta Durakan with First Federal Savings Bank of Champaign-Urbana, and we've been serving Champaign County since 1908. Our institution is safe, strong, and stable. We operate on a foundation of responsible and sound practices, and you can rest easy knowing we're your bank. Rated 5-star superior by Bauer Financial, Inc. Fast, friendly, and local. With local loan decisions and underwriting, if you're not already banking with us, give us a try, and we think you'll love it here. First Federal Savings Bank, 356bank.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS. 435-120.
Hi, it's Stevie J. So I took my mom in to Audubel, owned by Jeff Hanley, who owns 13 locations around Central Illinois. She's had so much trouble hearing for so long. Audubel, AUDIBEL, for hearing. And some of the new technologies, they've got AI now for some of these hearing aids, and they're virtually invisible. It's unbelievable, and it helped my mom. It helped her incredibly. We've been to other places. This is by far the best place I've ever been in for hearing help. Go to audibleteam.com. That's AUDIBEL. If you want more information about Audubel and how Jeff Hanley and his amazing culture and amazing team that they have, go to audibleteam.com. That's AUDIBEL, audibleteam.com. You'll be so happy you found Audubel. amazing work. They got a location in Champaign. Go to audibleteam.com. That's audibleteam.com. When it comes to finding a reliable vehicle, look no further than Sarah Champaign, your trusted automotive destination. They carry a lineup of top brands, including Honda, BMW, Subaru, GMC, and Buick. And they're not just about cars. They're about people. Their team is dedicated to providing you with trustworthy service and dependable vehicles that fit your lifestyle. Experience the difference at Sarah Champaign. Visit Sarah, S-E-R-R-A, Champaign.com.
Illini fans, taste what's special about Jet's Pizza by ordering any of their specialty pizzas for $5 off. That's right, save $5 on all specialty pizzas like the barbecue chicken pizza, chicken grilled to perfection, premium mozzarella cheese, bacon, red onion, and BBQ sauce. All piled onto Jet's amazing crust made from dough they make fresh every day. There's also their super special all-meaty chicken bacon ranch and more, all $5 off. Make your day special and order a Jet's specialty pizza for $5 off.
Fighting Illini football is back at Memorial Stadium for the final home game of the season on Saturday, November 25th, as they take on Northwestern in the battle for the Land of Lincoln Trophy. Bring the whole family to enjoy our family fun zone in Grange Grove with bounce houses, food trucks, balloon artists, and tailgating. See you at Memorial Stadium for Fighting Illini football's final home game against Northwestern on Saturday, November 25th. Get $15 tickets at fightingillini.com.
You moved into your new home using two men and a truck. The garage was clean. Then,
I love the new recliner. What are we going to do with this old one?
Put it in the garage for now.
Over time, this cycle continued.
Put it in the garage for now.
It happens. You got junk. Call Two Men and a Truck to get rid of all your junk. Residential or commercial, Two Men and a Truck has a solution for your junk removal. Contact them at twomenchampagne.com.
Two Men and a Truck.
By now, you've all heard the expression, when you turn the key and the car won't run, call 367-9481 for PDR Automotive. They are what's best for your truck or car. They are PDR. But who are they? They, the PDR staff, understand that a name is only as good as the people that represent it. The PDR staff has more than 335 years of combined automotive experience. Several employees now on staff for more than 25 years. PDR, more than just a name. Family owned and operated, now celebrating over 50 years in business.
Hey, could you tell me what aisle your car batteries are in?
Sure, I'll go grab one for you. Here's your battery. It might be expired, but oh well. Also, the brand isn't that great, but it should work for at least a year or two, maybe. Anyways, I went ahead and charged you for it, and here's the battery. Okay, have a great day.
What just happened?
Sometimes good things are hard to find, but they're worth the wait. Make the trip out to Interstate All Battery Center at 2504 North Mattis Avenue and get all of your battery needs taken care of by the trusted professionals. Give them a call today at 355-4855. Here's what somebody recently said at Pards in Urbana. I was there just a few minutes, and somebody came up and asked if I needed help. And they were incredible, helped me find the size of boot I needed. And then I bought a second pair, too. Everything was friendly. Everything was excellent. Visit Pards in Urbana, 206 North Maple, between Main and University in Urbana. It's Pards Western Shop since 1968. Or go online and visit Pards.com. Pards.com.
So when was the last time you saw a best deal guarantee?
You mean a promise that actually held up?
Right.
That some unknown online entity didn't want you to log in and download a code and then re-verify as you join some club?
Drives you nuts, I know.
And then once you purchase that set of steak knives?
Well, Dick Van Dyke Appliance World is a lot simpler. You find a verified great deal and they beat it. Just show them the deal you saw. A newspaper clipping or the online cart price will do, and then you're good.
At Dick Van Dyke Appliance World, it's one of those instances where you see a best deal guarantee and
you get the best deal.
This is Dennis Reakin, chairman of Dick Van Dyke Appliance World. Our exclusive 10-year protection plan comes free with most appliance purchases. Whether it's a GE, Whirlpool, Frigidaire, Bosch, or any of our 30 brands, I guarantee we will beat any competitor's deal. Wow!
Get the whole store.
Back on the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Let's go back to the Tapman's Towing phone line. Let's get filled in on the Iowa Hawkeyes football squad. Big one over there in Iowa City between Illinois and Iowa on Saturday. Also want to talk some Iowa basketball, kind of get a preview of what Fran McCaffrey's squad is looking like so far and how we should view them going into the future. So let's catch up with Sean Bach, Hawkeye insider, joining us now on the Tapman's Towing phone line. Sean, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Derek, appreciate you. Appreciate having me on. It's a good part of the year. I'm pretty busy with football, obviously, and then basketball's coming around. So it's no better time, I guess, to cover college sports.
Yeah, no doubt. And we don't have to ask you about, is Brian Ferentz going to be there next year? I guess that is something that's off your plate. We don't got to worry about that.
Yeah, that was getting old for a bit. That was getting pretty old for a bit. I mean, because it was pretty close off season for him to leave on his own terms, and obviously then those new contract amendments came out, and that just added a whole new deal to it. And the athletic director that was the one that put together those contract amendments ended up leaving, and the new one booted Ferentz out. So it's kind of nice to have that over with.
Well, Sean, despite some offensive struggles, obviously some injuries on the offensive side, we'll talk about a huge one on defense as well. This Hawkeyes squad is ranked within the top 20 in the country. They're 8-2. They've had a really good year on the whole. What's allowed them, despite their struggles on offense, to be in this position right now? They could be a 10-win football team if they went out.
Yeah, I mean, defense and special teams have been huge. We'll start with special teams. Torrey Taylor, obviously, has been one of the, if not the best punter in the country this season. And you look at his punt totals, and obviously he's punted way more than a lot of other punters. So you'll see that yards go up more, but you have to look at the yards per punt. I mean, he's putting it, I think he's at like 47.6 yards per punt or something like that, and that's fifth in the country. That's especially impressive when you consider that he has probably punted the ball 20 or 25 more times than the person than the punter that's right behind him. So in this year, it's kind of been key for him. It felt like last year he was more so trying to put the ball inside the 5-yard line or, you know, trying to pin the opponents deep. But this year he just seems more, you know, poised and more like, okay, I'm going to try and get 15 and not try and make the home run punt every time. And he's also got a couple of really good gunners too. I mean, Cooper DeJean, you'll hear that name a lot, obviously not playing this week, but Cooper's probably one of the best gunners in the country when it comes to fielding down those punts and, you know, being able to get them before they land into the end zone. I think Taylor has about like 27 or 28 punts inside the 20-yard line this year, which is really good. And he's had a number of games with punts of over 50 yards. So he's really delivered, and that set up the Iowa defense too, because it kind of feels like when the Iowa special teams unit gets a nice punt or gets something off, then the defense kind of seems to be motivated by that to, you know, finish the job. And there were a lot of question marks going into this year with the defense. I mean, losing guys like Kayvon Merriweather, Riley Moss in the secondary. But the biggest question was losing the two linebackers, Jack Campbell and Seth Benson, guys that were probably Kirk Ferentz's most consistent linebacker corps since Chad Greenway and Abdul Hajj back in 2002. And, you know, Jay Higgins and Nick Jackson of Virginia Chancellor, they've just stepped up and, you know, delivered for Iowa. It was a little shaky at first, but just to see the emergence of those two. Higgins is one of Iowa's leading tacklers in the Big Ten, I believe, and then Nick Jackson, the Virginia transfer, was a major get for Iowa in the offseason. Iowa beat out the likes of LSU, Oklahoma, and I think Auburn was involved at one time too. And, you know, getting him out of Virginia and then stealing him from some of those SEC schools, and to see his aggression just improve and how he's able to play in coverage has been a really big bright spot for Iowa. And, you know, taking into account the defensive line, they're without Noah Shannon, their top defensive tackle coming into the year. He got caught up in the gambling probe that went down during the offseason. And Iowa's defensive line doesn't have the sack numbers that they would have liked, but they've been able to get to the quarterback. They've been able to, you know, cause that pressure to get the defense, you know, to stop the imposing offense from you know, really piecing long drives together. They've been pretty solid against the run and the pass this year. So, I mean, those two things are, special teams and defense are, you know, Iowa's calling card. The complementary football thing is something that the Iowa football program holds, you know, very, you know, high in the highest regard, because it's true with this team, especially with how bad the offense has been. And, you know, to see that against Rutgers last week, the offense performance improved, it was a major step in the right direction.
On that note, Sean, with Deacon Hill being back there, he's had some rougher performances, but looked like, as far as just looking at the box score personally, I know you saw it in finer detail. What changed for him in that performance, and what has maybe been the maturation process as he's gone along?
Yeah, he just looks more comfortable back there, and I think a big reason for that was the offensive line. Kirk Ferentz said that the offensive line is probably the best performance of the season. You look at the Pro Football Focus grades, and that would back that up. And I mean, Derek, if you've paid attention somewhat to Iowa football over the last year, two, maybe even 3 years, outside of Tyler Linderbaum, there's been a lot of inconsistency up front for Iowa. Mm-hmm. And when you think about Iowa, the big thing you think about is offensive line play and consistency up front. Well, that really hasn't been there for Iowa in the last couple of years at a consistent, you know, manner. And, you know, I think part of that has to do with switching offensive line coaches. Obviously, injuries have played a big role too, but Iowa's offensive line was fantastic against Rutgers, and they're really hoping that. They've had their moments throughout the year, but that game against Rutgers was a major plus for this team, and, you know, everything just kind of seemed to click. So that's the big thing with Deacon. When he gets time in the pocket, he can be effective. He likes to let it loose. I mean, you're on your 6'3", 265 pounds, or however, you know, big he is, you're going to want to throw the football a little bit to, you know, kind of show off that strength. So he can certainly throw the football. Had a couple nice completions to the wide receivers, which was a step in the right direction. I mean, getting Caleb Brown the ball was huge, because a big talking point all year has been, you know, Caleb's probably the most dynamic wide receiver in Iowa's room, but he just really hasn't gotten the reps or gotten the snaps. And the Hawkeyes kind of seem to make it a point to get him the football on Saturday against Rutgers. So that was critical. And obviously losing those tight ends too, Luke Lachey and Eric All, that has hurt this Iowa offense. But, you know, Addison Estrenga has just stepped up and been, you know, just what Iowa needs. I think he had about 8 catches on 8 targets last week for about 50 yards. So not a ton of yards, but just a reliable guy that can move the chains a little bit. So that's kind of the story of the passing game. I mean, for Iowa, it starts with running the football. And, you know, if Iowa can, you know, get the run game going, establish that, that can set up the pass, and that could, you know, lead to success for this team.
Sean, in this matchup in particular, Johnny Newton, Keith Randolph up front for the Illini. So that's something the Illini fans obviously feel pretty well about. The secondary has been very gettable, but maybe it's not something that Iowa's looking to do, is take a lot of deep shots or just feed their wide receivers a bunch. So how do you kind of see that in terms of what maybe the game plan would be? Do you think Iowa can take advantage of a secondary that's been leaky, or is it something that is probably more so the running game and the tight ends, which – year after year, you may not even know the names. Like, oh, whoever's lining up at tight end's probably getting the ball, like you said, 8 times and going to be productive.
Yeah, I think they're more optimistic about letting it loose a little bit, especially given that Illinois secondary, like you said, is pretty spotty. So for Iowa, it's going to start with running the football and getting the ball to the tight end. But I think the fact that this Rutgers game is what Illinois or Iowa is coming off of, I think they feel like they might have a little more confidence to throw the football a little bit, especially seeing what they did last week. I mean, that was Iowa's highest yard total of the season, and they put up 22 points. And, I mean, I know yards on offense is kind of a overrated stat when it comes to judging points, depending on, you know, situations and stuff, but they had 397 against Western Michigan, and they scored 51 points. So I can take with that what you will, but I think they just seem to be more confident offensively. A big thing with Iowa football is practice. Like, if you practice well, you're going to play. I know that sounds stupid and sounds like cliche, but, I mean, they really, really believe in that. And the last couple of weeks, the talk has just been that practice on offense has just been more flowing, just like more comfort. Just everything seems to be clicking a little bit better. And, you know, that can translate on Saturday against Illinois. I think the Illini are going to have their hands full. But, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. Two games in a row, we'll have to see.
Sean, one more on the football side. You mentioned it already, Cooper DeJean being out, one of the top corners in college football, obviously a playmaker in special teams as well. Illinois fans are buzzing after the fact that John Paddock threw for 500 yards, and a lot of people hoping that he's going to get the start again. And obviously Isaiah Williams has been one of the most productive receivers in the league. So what is it going to look like with the secondary making up for that absence and Iowa's ability to go up against a passing game that's been able to make some things happen of late?
Yeah, that's gonna be one of the big stories. I mean, luckily for Iowa, Jamari Harris is a veteran guy, Montini grad. He's a veteran guy in the secondary, and you know, he's kind of picked it up a little bit recently. Obviously, opposite of Cooper, he's probably gotten more shots because teams can be sometimes afraid to throw to Cooper's side of the ball given his playmaking ability. So I mean, Jamari's a name to know for sure. And then Iowa's gonna have redshirt freshman Deshaun Lee step up at that cornerback spot opposite of Harris. And Deshaun Lee, I mean, he was Iowa's starting cornerback opposite of DeJean earlier in the season when Harris was serving his suspension for his involvement in the gambling probe. And, you know, Lee, I thought, did a really good job. I mean, they were kind of trying to pick on him a little bit because this was his first starting experience. But he's kind of one of those classic Phil Parker, Michigan defensive backs that seemed to really thrive in Iowa's system. And Lee, I mean, stepped up, had a couple big pass deflections against Iowa State, I believe, and, you know, had a couple solid games, but then got injured and wasn't able to fully come back for a few weeks. And then, you know, he's back, been on special teams, and now this is his opportunity to shine because, I mean, Illinois probably is, if you look at the last, you know, last week especially, Illinois is probably the best passing offense that Iowa will face this year. And it kind of feels like one of those games where Phil Parker is really going to have to come up with something sort of like a Phil Parker masterclass in a way. He's really going to have to find a way to scheme this Illinois team. And, you know, without Cooper there, it's going to be a little tougher. But, you know, I think Iowa feels pretty confident in Deshaun Lee that he can step up and take on that role. But I would not be surprised, especially if John Paddock is starting, to see Illinois kind of challenge Lee early in the game. Maybe take a couple deep shots downfield.
A couple more minutes with Sean Bock, Hawkeye Insider. You can follow him on Twitter at sbock247. I want to ask you about the hoops side. We saw Iowa battle against Creighton, ultimately fell in that game, a high-scoring affair, which I don't think that surprises anybody, but just kind of want to get your feel on Fran McCaffrey's squad this year. They lose Chris Murray, a first-round pick. They also lose Philip Rabracho, who ended up being a pretty darn good player for them last year as well. So new faces in that front court. Iowa's averaging right now 97 a game. I know it's early, but is this going to be another year where they just put up a bunch of points? And I personally, when I was asked about it, I thought they were maybe a team that was getting slept on a little bit, because I think that you can always trust Fran to have a productive offense, and Carver Hawkeye is a tough place to go.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that Creighton game, I think, gave people a lot more optimism about this team. And, you know, Iowa really had a chance to win that game in certain moments, or at least, you know, kind of stick around a little longer, because they were, I know they were tied at halftime, but Creighton started to pull away when they were hitting, I think they started out the second half like 4-4 from three, and Iowa was kind of trading twos for threes with them. So, I mean, they had a chance to win that game, and that's especially impressive considering what Creighton can do, because when Creighton's really going, man, those guys are something else with their ability to shoot the basketball. But, yeah, I mean, I think with losing Chris Murray is obviously huge, but I think Iowa feels like they have three or four guys that can really pick up the scoring slack. They kind of see themselves as a more balanced group this year. Well, it's felt like in previous years, they've kind of leaned on the guys like Luka Garza, the Murray twins, and even Joe Wieskamp at times to handle a lot of the scoring load. This year, they seem to be a little more balanced. And Ben Kricke was the one, the Valpo transfer. He was the one that had a great game against Creighton, but problem with playing against Creighton, I mean, all of Kricke's shots were inside the arc. a lot of mid-ranges that he ended up draining, but Creighton was hitting threes on the opposite end. So that's something that's not going to be sustainable, especially against a team like Creighton. But they just love how Ben Kirky's able to, you know, play with the basketball and able to, you know, kind of be elusive off the dribble a lot more than Phil Vrabacha was, because Phil was, you know, more of just I'm going to put my back to the basket, or I'm going to get a playoff and offensive rebound and put it back up. And I mean, that's definitely valuable, and he played bigger than he was, but Kirky is just this natural fit for Iowa on the offensive end that they feel like can really help guys like Peyton Stanford, Patrick McCaffrey, and Tony Perkins. But yeah, I mean, starting lineup has been solid. They've had their moments. I mean, I think you look back at that Creighton game, if Peyton Stanford was healthy, I think Iowa probably would have made it a little bit of a closer game because they needed Peyton's three-point shooting. But honestly, I think the story of the season so far has been this freshman group. I mean, there's two guys from the state of Illinois, Owen Freeman, Brock Hardy. I know Illinois was recruiting Owen a bit. I think they were kicking around with Brock later on in the process. But those guys, and Price Stanford out of Iowa and Laji Dembele out of New Jersey, those guys have been really solid in the early going. We're a little tense against Creighton to start out, but I think they logged a total of like 46 minutes amongst the four of them against Creighton, which, I mean, you're playing in Omaha. Creighton's a pretty crazy environment. They love their basketball out there. And this freshman group, I mean, Owen Freeman was giving Ryan Kalkbrenner the business at times. And Kalkbrenner is one of the top big men in the country. And, you know, Owen was kind of toughing him up a little bit. Kalkbrenner got his too, but Owen looked really good out there. And he's just such a skilled big man, and there's just such a high ceiling with him. Brock's going to be fun to watch. I mean, obviously the size component's going to hurt him at times, but the things that he can do with the basketball and just the pace he plays, that's really impressive. Dembele is a little more offensively skilled than I think a lot of people imagine early process. I mean, he hit two three-pointers against Creighton. And then Price Stanford's kind of similar to his older brother, but he can do more off the dribble and, you know, be a little more elusive with the basketball. But the one thing that stands out about those four guys is they just seem to be mature. Like, they just don't seem to be scared. They, you know, come out, attack, and, you know, if you can have a team with a lot of depth and, you know, not a big drop-off from the starting group to the bench, that's going to be so crucial down the stretch, you know, especially once you get to Big Ten play. You don't have to rely on your starters nonstop like, you know, some of these teams that don't have those benches. So, you know, the expectations, I think they rose pretty drastically after that game for a lot of people. I always kind of viewed them as their ceiling as like an 8 or 9 seed in the NCAA tournament, kind of like last year. But, I mean, hey, if they can kind of play consistently and stay healthy, I think there's a chance that they could, you know, potentially be top 5 in the Big Ten, maybe, you know, top 6, and potentially compete for like a 6 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, based on right now, it looks to be a lot of fluidity there in the middle of that Big Ten, even maybe in the upper tier behind Purdue. Sean Bock, Hawkeye Insider, enjoyed catching up with you, man. Great stuff. And as Illinois has two late season matchups with the Hawkeyes on the hardwood, we'll have to catch up with you again then. So appreciate your time today and look forward to talking down the road.
Yeah, for sure, Derek. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks. Sean Bock, Hawkeye Insider, joining us on the Tapman's Towing phone line. We're due for a break. Hear from Brett Bielema here in a little bit, and we'll talk some more basketball before we get out of here. This is The Drive.
You're listening to WSJK ESPN 93.5 Tuscola, Champaign-Urbana, your home for the St. Louis Cardinals. Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm Home and Auto Insurance, you save an average of $889. State Farm agent Kurt Lenshaw is ready to help you combine home and auto and save right here in Champaign-Urbana. Call 35-